You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, October 16th, 2024. Still ahead, we're going to be visiting with Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro about the care economy and what our presidential campaigns promising to do about those who have to care for children, those who have to care for elderly parents, and those who have to care for both, the sandwich generation, they call it. So we've got that coming up. And then at the bottom of the hour, we have a guest from Green Bay, a communications professional, who decided rather than just continuing to hear all about Project 2025, she wanted to learn more about it for herself and started writing about what she was learning. And yeah, it's as bad as you've been hearing that it was, it appears, based on her readings. So we'll have that guest coming up, Todd Alba as well. But first, meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us on, what would we call this, a wicked cold morning. If you're in Black River Falls, for example, it's still 16 degrees right now, 18 in Hayward, 29 here on Lake Wissota, 37 in Milwaukee. Brittany, this is not summer anymore. We're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in summer anymore, are we?
No, we're not. But hey, you know what? It's all up from here. How's that for the rest of the week?
Okay, I'll take that.
Yes, you always got to find the positive to every negative. I know we're waking up to this crisp, cold, frosty morning, widespread frost across the state. In fact, our first statewide hard freeze. The only places above freezing is out towards Door County into the Fox Valley and along Lake Michigan. Otherwise, today, it's a crisp one still. We have a high-pressure system that has moved south of us now. It's still going to give us clear skies, a ton of sunshine today, and calm winds. So nothing too crazy. Highs will be warmer than we've been, about 10 degrees warmer. We'll all be into those mid-50s today, and overnight tonight is the last chance of some more frost. Of course, further north you live, you're closer to that freezing mark. Further south, you'll probably stay into those upper 30s. But like I said, it's up and up from here into the mid-60s by tomorrow and 70s over the weekend.
70s. Now, that I can get used to. Coming back to that would be very nice. But again, still the dryness, we can't say enough about. It's still not time for burning anything yet. You know?
No, not at all. I mean, you think about the leaves falling on the ground, the dry pine needles out there, the drought conditions are now severe, especially into northern and northeast Wisconsin. So when you put the breezy winds, which we're going to get tomorrow and into Friday, on top of that, I'd just avoid all burning at all costs.
Yeah, that's definitely the way to go. Good morning from Tigerton, writes Rob. It's a frosty 29 degrees. The leaves in western Shawano County are at their peak. I went and took some pictures of them. We mentioned CCR last segment, that it was one of my favorite rock groups. Have you never seen the rain? Is my favorite song from that group. I miss taking my parents out to eat, because this is take your parents to lunch day as well. If I'd have known he was going to write that, I would have queued up that CCR song. It transitions perfectly into the dry conditions that we have out here.
Yes, I agree. And Rob's parents, oh my gosh, my heart goes out to them. They used to watch me on TV back in the day. Isn't that cool?
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
That's how Rob and I know each other. His parents used to watch me when I was out in Green Bay, and went through a lot when they both passed. And then I was like, you need to get outside in nature and enjoy the weather and send me some pictures. And now he loves it.
And drink your water, Rob. Drink your water.
Stay hydrated. Wow, that's great. Thanks, Brittany, very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
All right. We'll bring Elizabeth Montemurro in just a bit. First, a couple of notes here that the state of Wisconsin's fiscal year ended back on June 30th. So we're well into the next fiscal year, but they had to do some more, you know, crunching of numbers, paying of bills, as one does. And they can now release, how did the state of Wisconsin end the year? Because we've had a budget surplus for some time now, and it has fluctuated. It went as high as around $7 billion at one point. Well, the final number is in, and $4.6 billion is what the state of Wisconsin essentially has in the bank at the end of the fiscal year. That is not a good thing. That is truly a mark of a legislature run by Republicans for these past 14 years that preferred to do nothing rather than make key investments into parts of the Wisconsin economy. Now, I hasten to add, I am not saying you spend your budget surplus down to zero, not by any stretch, but $4.6 billion after years and years and years of structural deficits, we now have, thanks to Governor Evers and through federal pandemic aid and the way that the governor allocated it, we have a very strong economy here in the state of Wisconsin, made even stronger by things that were investments that were made by the Biden-Harris administration, which is how we ended up with a multi-billion dollar surplus. And again, Governor Evers and Democratic lawmakers asked Republicans to work with them to do things like fix a very broken formula for school aid and for local government aid. And all Republicans would do was say, well, we'll meet you partway on the schools. We'll allow more state aid to local schools, but you also have to give a lot more of our tax dollars to private voucher schools. And Governor Evers took that deal in order to get some more new money toward our public schools. But it has led to, you know, a system. We're now paying for two school systems in the state of Wisconsin. There were people quite literally begging Republican lawmakers at the Capitol earlier this year to invest in child care, the Child Care Counts program, so that parents would have reliable, affordable daycare, so that daycare providers could pay their workers more than poverty wages, and so that they could afford to stay open. Republicans turned their back on it. In fact, at 2 in the morning, the Joint Finance Committee voted to remove everything. They zeroed out what the governor was asking for. They didn't say, well, let's meet you halfway, or let's negotiate, let's talk about this or that. No, they just put a big fat zero there. And I remember the day that the legislature was going to talk about this, and all the child care providers that came to the state capitol, and there was supposed to be a special session. Speaker Robin Voss wasn't there. We later learned he was thousands of miles away at a conference in some sunny, beachy resort town, rather than doing work at the state capitol. So that's $4.6 billion being left on the table, not being invested. What do they want to do with it? Well, they either want to force the governor to make more bad deals that would lead to some more of their priorities, or, as they just outwardly said back when Tim Michels was running for governor, we'll just sit on it until we can get a Republican governor, and then we're going to give it all away as tax cuts skewed toward the very wealthy. So that money that should be invested in you, in small businesses, in infrastructure, in farming, it's all just sitting there as a Republican-led legislature squanders it. Now, of course, these same folks are out on the campaign trail talking about how bipartisan they have been and how much they want to work together on these things. That's called running scared, because this was a group that could not run far enough to the right back when the maps were rigged. With gerrymandered districts, they didn't have to even listen to Republican or to Democratic bills. Most Democratic bills didn't even get a public hearing, much less come up for a vote. Now we're hearing we're going to work together in all this. So when you talk to a Republican candidate or a Republican legislator, just ask them this. Why did you leave $4.5 billion on the table? And what's your plan to actually put that to work if you were to get elected to the legislature for next year? Early voting is taking off around the country. Georgia opened up their rolls yesterday for early voting, and they smashed the old record. On the first day of early voting in Georgia, the old record was 136,000. Yesterday, 328,000 people started voting early. I just looked up the Wisconsin numbers from yesterday. We're now at just shy of 250,000. 240,000 people have already cast their absentee ballots. And many more will do so starting next week when in-person early absentee voting opens up, in your local clerk's offices. People want to vote. They want to get their message out there right now about who they think should be in office and what they think the priorities should be. And one more note about a story that we followed yesterday when we told you about how the Harris Walz campaign was going to be unveiling a new rural agenda. Well, they did that. The details have come out, and my story is on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Head on over there, and you can read all the details on what they want to do. It includes things like 10,000 new healthcare workers, which would be done by things like financial aid and loan forgiveness and scholarships to help serve rural and tribal areas. There would be grants to help EMS programs expand in order to cut in half the number of Americans living more than 25 minutes away by ambulance. Medicare would permanently cover telemedicine, a pandemic effort that helped millions of rural residents maintain access to quality care. The Harris-Walz plan would restore the Affordable Connectivity Program, which made high-speed internet service available to millions of households. Republicans in Congress refused earlier this year to take up President Biden's request to fund and continue the program. And one I wasn't aware of, but I thought was noteworthy, that the Harris-Walz folks want to address a controversial issue known as right to repair for farmers. Because right now, when some of their major machinery goes down, they are required to have repairs done at authorized dealerships. And so you're kind of captive to them. Advocates of right to repair want manufacturers to make instruction manuals, spare parts, and software codes more readily available so that farmers can make their own repairs or have their choice of a third-party repair technician. All that and more is part of a new rural agenda from the Harris-Walz campaign. Again, head to upnorthnewswi.com for more about that. Now, I mentioned voting for people that are going to go along with your priorities. That includes the care economy, and Elizabeth Montemurro is going to join us on the other side of this break to talk more about an event that took place with Kamala Harris's sister about just that thing. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Be right back. Again, we're playing cuts off Songs in the Key of Life, the Stevie Wonder landmark album that debuted at number one on the charts this day in 1976. If you're looking for more information about voting, how to early vote, absentee vote, register to vote, what districts are what, who's running in those districts, two great sources of information for you here. One, check out our voting guide at upnorthnewswi.com. The voting guide is right there at the top of the page. And over at civicmedia.us, displayed prominently, is the 2024 voter guide put together by Dan Schaefer. So don't be uninformed about what's on the ballot this year or how to go about voting. Check out those voting guides from Civic Media and from Up North News. Elizabeth Montemurro, Up North News reporter, joins us now. Elizabeth, how are you?
Good. Bundled up this morning.
Yes, you are.
Winter running gear.
That's right. Well, that's right. You're a runner. Did you just did a marathon, or you're about to?
I just did. I ran the Milwaukee Lakefront Marathon a week and a half ago now.
Wow. How did that go?
It was very windy. You run over the Hone Bridge twice.
No.
And, which is maybe the best view of the city, in my opinion, but not so fun when you have 30-mile-an-hour wind gusts heading towards the finish line.
Oh, no.
At the top of the bridge.
I can't even fathom that. Not to get off on a tangent here, but maybe you saw the story as well. TJ Holmes, who used to be an ABC personality, was running some big marathon last weekend, and his Achilles snapped at mile 21. I mean, if you're going to have something like that happen, maybe happen at mile 5 or so, but to have the finish line almost in sight has to be just heartbreaking. And I say that as a guy who's run one half marathon and ain't never doing that again. So I tip my cap to you, Elizabeth, for doing this. Among the stories that you've been working on out there deals with an event recently on the care economy. Again, there's so much to be said about people who need home health care. Maybe there's assisted care for their elderly parents. And of course, there's child care and all of that. And you recently had a reason to talk to Kamala Harris's sister, to State Senator LaTanya Johnson, to Congresswoman Gwen Moore. Tell us what that event was all about.
Yeah, it was a very interesting event. Maya Harris, Kamala Harris's sister, was in town the end of last week, and she held a roundtable with several members of SEIU. So these are individuals that work in the healthcare industry in different capacities, and a couple other individuals that are the recipients or helping take care of loved ones. And, you know, on the backs of Kamala's announcement last week, Maya Harris was in town and just wanted to really learn more about individuals that touch the care economy and are working in it. And so it was a great conversation that was had, and we heard from several individuals, like I said, that are working in the healthcare industry and really just were excited to hear about Kamala's plan to have Medicare cover the cost of in-home care.
And I've got to say that parenthetically on this, this is a big plan. This is ambitious. This is bold for Medicare to cover in-home care. And the national media hardly gave it a mention, if at all, focusing instead on polls and rallies and all kinds of other things. And it's funny, when you talk to regular Americans about this, I mean, no pun intended, this hits close to home for them.
It really does. You know, Representative Gwen Moore talked about the fact that a lot of people, when they reach the state in life where they need to have care or move into a nursing home, they don't understand the cost and the fact that in order to qualify, they have to, you know, sell all of their belongings and their home just to be able to afford care. And this plan that Kamala Harris, or proposal that Kamala Harris announced last week, would remove that financial stress and that financial burden that cripples a lot of families.
Right. And it's something that would impact a lot of folks in Wisconsin. We have legislators that are exposed to that either by talking to their constituents or in the case of one state senator who's actually lived that life as a care provider.
Exactly.
That would be LaTanya Johnson from Milwaukee. Let's hear a bit about what she had to say about how, you know, if you take care of the care economy, you're taking care of families who want to move from the working poor to the middle class.
The difference that money makes is, you know, it's the opportunity to be able to have something to eat on their tables, their parents having the ability to pay their rent. And for so many of the jobs here in the city of Milwaukee, they don't have paid time off. And as a former child care provider, I operated a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week child care center for over 10 years. And you would see moms bringing their kids to daycare even though they knew that their child was sick. But them missing work meant either they couldn't pay their electricity bill or they couldn't pay rent. Parents shouldn't have to choose between caring for their sick children and paying their rent. I see that in the state legislature sometimes when I go to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle and I ask them to consider legislation that would help the children in my district. And they say, my heart aches for you, but that's not happening in my district. These children are still Wisconsinites. Mm, they still live here. So those type of proposals mean the world to those kids because that gives a lot of our children that are living and working poor families the opportunity to obtain the middle class.
Okay. The most important part of that bite that I'm going to call BS on right now is Republican lawmakers telling her that's not a problem in my district where parents have to bring sick kids to childcare, hoping the childcare provider doesn't kick the kid out because they can't afford not to work. For any Republican to say that's not happening in my district, that Elizabeth just defies any kind of credibility whatsoever. People really were able to relate to this at this event.
Exactly. And as Maya Harris said in the middle of the event, we have to pay attention to this because the care economy or caregiving is what makes all other things work.
That's right. There is no economy if you don't take care of the care economy. Elizabeth Montemaro, thank you so much for bringing us a little bit about that event. Have a great day. Stay warm.
You too.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Lynn Gerlach from Green Bay, who's been studying up on Project 2025, its impact on education, and much more. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You can get our Up North News daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the top banner. The stories in there today includes an article about how much people think they actually need to have in terms of salary to feel financially secure. What's your own level of financial security? Not winning the lottery, but what pay grade would have you feeling like, okay, I can take care of things and feel comfortable in life. There's a story about some interesting murals that you can see in New London and an article about grocery prices and how they might be impacted by a Harris presidency versus a Trump presidency. Again, sign up for our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. This is our homeroom segment. We do this every Wednesday morning at 7:30. We typically focus on public education, opportunities, threats, things like that. But I want to tell you the story about how we came to be meeting our next guest here. We have kind of a virtual coffee clutch with some educators every week. And it came down to a case of somebody who knew somebody who has studied up on Project 2025 just cause, and has been writing all about it. And I said, well, can she talk about the impact of Project 2025 on education? And they said, oh no, Lynn Gerlach can talk to you about Project 2025 on pretty much everything. So we might hit on everything, but we'll have an emphasis on education as we welcome in communication professional Lynn Gerlach joining us now from Tamarack Communication. Lynn, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm just fine, thank you.
I hope you feel as complimented as intended and it by no way, shape, or form oversold, because I have looked through the website, the blog that you and others have been putting together at Tamarack Communication, and it is, I mean, I've never written a master's thesis, so I'm using the term loosely, but this is practically a master's thesis on Project 2025, written in plain English by real people like yourself. I can't thank you enough for doing it, but I have to ask, why? Why did you decide to take this 900-page document and tear into it?
Well, to answer that question just will demonstrate what a nerd I am. I'm sorry.
Yay! We celebrate nerds here.
People were talking about it, and I wanted to know what they were talking about. And it's for the same reason that a couple of years ago I studied critical race theory, because I didn't know what they were talking about. So everybody's talking about Project 2025, but I could tell that a lot of people were talking and they didn't know what they were talking about. They were just kind of grabbing little snippets and cherry picking. And so I decided that I was just going to read the whole thing. It took me about 5 or 6 weeks because I didn't just pass my eyes over it. I made sure I understood all the main ideas and actually pulled them out and made my own summary, which was about 250 pages, almost verbatim quotes. And I did have to stop and do some research along the way, too, to understand it all. It was a real eye-opener for me.
Well, and I love the, you're very candid about it, like in the section about the Export-Import Bank, where you rightly acknowledge, I didn't know that was a thing. You know, what is it? And what it does is it was, I think in many ways, a civics lesson, because, oh, you know, a lot of us understand, you know, the basic workings of government. Some of us have served in elected office, and so we know, you know, quite a bit more detail about it. But there's always more to learn. And, you know, what would you say is your takeaway, not about Project 2025, but the workings of government, the workings of the federal government, as you've understood it more? Do you feel like you have more of an appreciation for all that government has to do to provide services and be effective?
Well, sure. I mean, it was a huge learning experience. I didn't know about most of these things. But I guess my biggest takeaway was understanding how vulnerable the executive branch is to political management. I didn't realize. I mean, basically what this mandate is saying is fire all the civil servants and make sure every single person in every job has been handpicked by the president so that they will do his bidding. And I was not aware of that. But yes, the magnitude of it, the number of agencies and the number of people was just overwhelming to me.
Yeah. And look, it's very, very easy. I get this. It's very easy for people to say that, it's very easy for people to say that government is bloated. It's just so big. But my response to that has always been, try to envision 300 million people, or at the state of Wisconsin level, try to envision 5 million people. You're not going to serve that through, you know, a branch office and a card table. It takes work to get these things done, and it would take very little work, unfortunately, Lynn, like you said, to really threaten and dismantle parts of it. So before I forget, because I could do this for hours with you here on all the various areas, but we did want to focus on the Department of Education. The main one that we've heard repeatedly is that Project 2025 calls for basically getting rid of the U.S. Department of Education. So that one we've talked about, you can bring that up, but along with anything else that you think folks ought to know about what would happen to education in Wisconsin and elsewhere if all of this were to be fully implemented. What are your impressions of that?
Well, I would say, first of all, people should think about what the alternative is that's being proposed. If we dismantle the Department of Education, what is Lindsay Burke, the author of this section, suggesting? And what she's suggesting is that you fund education, you fund public education or all education through taxpayer money, but the states or the local governments or the families make the decisions about how to spend the money. So she promotes education savings accounts. And she suggests that that every family should get a certain amount of taxpayer money, completely taxpayer money, and they should be able to take it wherever they want and use that money to educate their child the way they want. That's a huge thing. Another thing I think that you have to keep in mind is the concerns that are expressed throughout Project 2025, but also about the Department of Education. And that is, for one, absolutely against diversity, equity, and inclusion. I mean, it's like it's a bad thing. Like, equity is a bad thing. Inclusion is a bad thing. And I saw that in almost every section of this project, but even in the Department of Education. The suggestion, for example, that if you use restorative justice for, with children that aren't getting along, if one has has special education needs, you're wasting money because you're bringing in some critical race theory consultant to help restore justice. Stop it. That's one. Another one is this determination that if a child has gender issues, has questions about gender, that the school must absolutely, unequivocally not support it. If a child wants to change his or her pronouns, no, not without parental permission. There's this concern, this fear that schools are teaching children about gender ideology and encouraging them to get hormone blockers and things like that. So it's not just about getting rid of the Department of Education. And she does suggest phasing it out over 10 years. She doesn't say just close it down. And she has a plan for what should change. But it's also about what she has in mind. She also believes that charter schools should, that the grant for charter schools, or the grant isn't the right word, perhaps, that she says we need a larger voucher system, and charter schools need to have no restrictions.
Which, by the way, as one of the authors of your section notes, I mean, there's no data backing these up. We talk about this all the time for all this talk of turning education into a consumer good. There's really no data that indicates that it's any kind of a better model, and in fact opens up the door. Decentralization, you know, opens the door toward more children falling through the cracks than ever. Frankly, the writings indicate the better course of action would be to make better investments in our public education rather than to tear it all down.
True. That's possible. And the way that the investments are made is important, too. Consider how Wisconsin funds its public schools. That's something to think about. I will say that I have concerns myself. And I was a teacher for many, many years. That's my background. And she does bring up some good points. If there were data to support some of these things, I'm not saying our education system is perfect. I'm not saying it doesn't need to be improved, but we need to get the data, and we possibly do need to rethink the way that we do education today.
Yeah, and but the answer is not necessarily to blow it all up and then, you know, let all families and all educators essentially fend for themselves. But that's brought up that way, I think, getting to another one of your sections here, because so much of Project 2025 isn't so much for something, it's against something. It's against the left or leftists.
That's
or
exactly
the,
right.
Or the woke or whatever. What was your personal impression going through this in terms of how Project 2025 strikes me more as a way to turn the politics of division into an actual tool of government?
You know, I'll be very honest with you. This was, this for me was stunning. It was heartbreaking because I went into this believing, perhaps very naively, that I was going to read a reasoned analysis. And I understood it was going to come from a conservative viewpoint, but there's nothing wrong with being conservative. And so I was ready, and I knew I wouldn't agree with all of it, but I didn't know it was going to slap me in the face and be so ugly and nasty. And, you know, right away, anti-left. Well, okay, I'm on the left, so it's against me. I understand that. But then I kept hearing this woke thing over and over. And I'll be honest, I have ignored that word because I was an English teacher, and that's a grammatical atrocity. Woke is a past tense verb. It's not a past participle. It's misused. So I've always ignored it. And finally, I thought, I got to find out what they really mean by woke. So I looked it up, and I read the definition of woke, and I thought, my God, that's me. This is against me. And for the first time in all these years, I saw this divisive political scene as actually targeting me. And I got to say, it really hurt.
I think that a lot of folks, when they get a little bit deeper beyond what we see on the news or hear on the radio about politics, and they discover the things that you've discovered, It is a bit of a wake-up call, no pun intended, to find out that there are folks who are explicitly, you know, anti-equity, who see people who disagree with them as an enemy rather than somebody that you can work with. One of the books that I recommend more than any other is called When Republicans Were Moderates Too, or something like that, by the late Minnesota Senator Dale Durenberger. And you hear this now from Dale Schultz in Wisconsin, who, by the way, last week endorsed Kamala Harris. We all have friends and neighbors who are conservatives, who are right of center. We have these great conversations, and they're almost always looking for a way to agree on something and to compromise on something. And you didn't get that impression from this document at all.
No, I didn't. And, you know, I can remember when my Democrat and Republican relatives used to sit down when I was a child and have reasonable conversations and have a beer together and walk away still friends and you know, cousins or whatever they were. And it life went on, and it was just accepted that there were two different ways of looking at it. But this is really, really ugly.
It really is. But it is also extremely informative. Not just that it might motivate people to get involved who otherwise wouldn't get involved because they see the threats there, but because I think in your case as well, it just gives us a better appreciation that government is good. Government is a force for good when you have service-minded people in it, rather than folks who want to divide. I, again, recommend highly to everybody, go to tamarackcommunication.com and read up on the things that they're writing. Lynn, you and your friends who helped on this have done such a public service. I thank you again, and thank you so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure.
And again, I double-checked here, and the book I was talking about by Dave Durenberger, the former Minnesota senator, the title of it is When Republicans Were Progressive. It's an outstanding book about how the history of Republicans has gone in such a different direction. More after this. You're Up North. I might just go, you know, songs in the key of life, bumper music for the rest of the week here. There's just so much that's good on there. Todd Alba joins us now, or as always introduced on YouTube by Tony Up in Ashland, the Todd Father is here with us now. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. A little frost of the pumpkin down here in South Central Wisconsin. I'm sure the pumpkin is frozen up north.
Oh yeah, it's a bowling ball now. It would cause concussions. Tomorrow, by the way, here on the program in our Women Win Wisconsin segment, Senator Tammy Baldwin will be joining us. You can tell the races are all heating up quite a bit. You've got that first Senate debate between Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde on Friday evening. Civic media coverage begins at 6:50. And, you know, I guess, Todd, I want to come at it this way, the way I did yesterday, titling the first hour about how it's just going to get uglier. And I don't tell you that to depress you. I tell you that to say, prepare yourself and remember the things that matter, and not the slime that certain people are going to want to drag us into.
Yeah, I think this debate on Friday is going to be interesting. I think people will probably be keyed in the first 5 seconds because Hovde, I'm told, is going to appear from Orange County. It'll be palm trees behind him. So I think that'll be a real key of how this election
I think that goes. Might not be true. But see, now you're going to get me in trouble because I got done telling folks about that article that came out yesterday from Wisconsin Watch, the investigative news site.
Oh yeah.
And how it looked at six different radio hosts for their truthfulness. And you might find this hard to believe, but the two most right-wing radio hosts told the most whoppers.
I'm shocked.
And over the course of any given week. always. And yours truly got dinged for a couple of things like conflating or confusing the price or how much Americans spend on Halloween candy versus – or not Halloween candy, Valentine's Day candy versus Valentine's Day jewelry. No, those aren't the same at all. And I will take that inaccuracy – over the blatant misinformation that's out there any day of the week. And Roger in Stevens Point had a comment on this as well. He said, just scanning the article, I find it incomplete. There are more local conservative talkers in Green Bay, Wausau, and La Crosse that should also have been a part of this review. And how much information have they spread? And again, I know it sounds like we're throwing stones over here, but I agree. I think yeah. more local hosts ought to be evaluated, mostly because, frankly, a guy like you is going to come out on top of it, the service that you do to listeners compared to what you hear from so many others.
Well, thank you, Pat. I would put you in the good guy, good person category as well. Look, I mean, I don't think any of us go around saying that we're perfect. I think that certainly, well, I know from my standpoint, I know you well enough by now that you follow the same thing. I mean, here at Civic, you know, our CEO and owner basically gave me one directive. He said, tell the truth and do it with integrity, period.
Yeah.
And I know that you're a part of Courier, but I mean, you're on Civic. And I think as long as we strive towards that, we use that as our North Star, doesn't mean we're never going to make a mistake. But I think more than anywhere else, we are apt when we do, and if we do make a mistake, to go back and correct it. But I want to go back to what you started with. I'm sorry to kind of be goofy about it, because I guess I'm at the point in this campaign, Pat, where I got to laugh a little bit, or I'll just like curl up in a ball. I think you're absolutely right. And Jane and Greg and I talked about it on their show yesterday on Matt and Aaron Air 10 until noon. My feeling is, and I'd be interested to know what yours is, I don't think Trump is trying to win anymore. These campaign rallies, the darkness, these ads right now, some of them you see particularly ads attacking trans folks in that community, is just, it's hogwash. And it's a narrative to get people riled up. I truly believe that on election night, Donald Trump, regardless of what the real results are, is he and Vance are going to declare victory by 10 or 11 o'clock, encourage people to go to state capitals and local polling places and raise holy hell. And they're going to try to throw it into the court of public opinion and the courts, regardless of who wins. And I think that we have some very unsettled times ahead. And I don't mean to say that to scare people, but rather I think we need to be prepared and in that mindset. And do I think that Trump could legit win? Yes, I do. Do I think that Harris could legit win? Yes, I do. I think Wisconsin will be won by whomever by 12,000 to 15,000 votes.
Yeah, it's going to be that close, which again boggles my mind to think that. Then there's this wrinkle, and again, not meant to scare, but to put people on guard. They elect a new speaker on January 3rd, and then they certify the votes on January 6th. There's no guarantee that if Republicans hold the House by, again, a slim majority, that there's going to be a speaker by January 6th. And
correct.
Then what?
Correct.
You know? And again, I'm not expecting you to fill that in. I'm just saying we have to be prepared for that possibility that, once again, it is a dysfunctional Republican-led House of Representatives that could really throw a wrench into the works. And so maybe the best thing to do is not let Republicans have the majority in the House where they could essentially try to undermine democracy.
I think it is an important point, Pat, in that what you just said, basically, these races, and whether it's Rebecca Cook versus Van Orden in the third, whether it's Lyerly versus Weed in the eighth, or whether it's Style versus Barkett in the first, all of these races are close, particularly the third and the eighth. From the things I'm seeing, that's within the margin of error. Your vote, folks, our votes, our collective votes. And that's the thing. Don't get scared. Don't get apprehensive. Don't vote.
Exactly.
Have a plan, register, and take five people with you.
240,000 absentee ballots have already been cast. So get yours in there and get other people to vote as well. Todd Alba, back at noon. Thank you, sir.
We'll see you then, my friend. Thank
good,
you. Bye-bye.
Good to see you. And Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air. So tune in for that as well across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.